Welcome back to NBC BCTV
Sports.
The number one NBC affiliate in British Columbia that's on TV and only talks about sports in British Columbia.
NBC BC Sports.
That's how we're going to start the show, huh?
I don't know, man.
We got to do a different intro. That was horrible.
We got to do it. Dude.
That's confusing.
Well, now what am I supposed to do with that?
I don't know.
Now I feel great. Me and Joe had a little fun there, and you called us idiots, and now I'm totally confident to do some fun jokes.
I was thinking about more letters to add. No, I just have to get rid of those letters in my head.
You got 26 of them.
SUV.
SVU.
NTSC.
All right. Cops are here. Okay, cops are here. Fun police. Okay, time out. You,
everybody,
get on the ground.
Everybody out. Not you, Thompson. You stay right there. I know your mother's out of town.
Thompson?
Your kid's name is Thompson. Tanner Thompson.
Thompson Pruitt. Right. I'm the head of the Young Republicans Committee.
All right. Welcome back to Past Gas, the Donut Automotive History Podcast. My name is Nolan Sykes. Across from me, for the listener, is one James Pumphrey.
Hello.
And then to my left is Joe Weber.
Hey there.
I don't know if you guys know directions and how they work, but that means Joe is sitting on my right.
Whoa.
Yeah. And Nolan is across from me as well.
I'm starboard.
Joe's on my starboard, and Nolan is on my
bow.
What's the other?
Stern.
My stern.
No, the bow's the front, right?
Yeah.
I watched Pirates of the Caribbean last week, so I basically know everything about ships. I don't know about you, James. I'm feeling a little tired.
Yeah, we've been building our 350Zs for season
right.
two of High Low.
Season 1.5.
Sure. Yeah. Season 1.5. We're finishing the Zs. And we've been doing that for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. So
we've been in a garage just cranking wrenches.
Really cranking, yeah.
Slamming bolts.
Yeah.
Swerving nuts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're recording this on Valentine's Day. And I
Pucker up. It's V-Day with Donut.
But yeah, I really can't wait for you guys to see the Z's how they are now. We've made a lot of changes.
Yeah, man. Both cars eat, boy. They eat.
Yeah, they get to the buffet and they're just scooping mac and cheese on
They go to Vegas and they don't even gamble. They just eat.
They get charged because they don't eat everything off their plate. That's how hungry they think they are.
No, but they are very cool, and I can't wait for you guys to see what we've done there. High-low is very taxing, both physically and mentally, but it's one of my favorite things to do. Although, I will say, I'm glad that the shoot is basically over at this point.
We have to wake up so early to do that show.
Yeah, it was a lot. Anyway, today on Past Gas, we are starting our two-part series on the rise and fall, then half rise and fall again, of one of the most influential industry figures in automotive history. This is the insane story of one John DeLorean.
Ooh. Every time I read his name, I think, DeLorean.
We are.
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars. It's not about sports.
Hey guys, welcome to the Past Gas Podcast. If you like Past Gas, please help us grow by giving us a good rating and a nice review on the podcast platform of your choice. It'll really help us out, and I really appreciate that. So thank you. All right, now for the show.
He was notorious.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
DeLorean.
And we'll see why.
Damn.
Yeah. He didn't just make that stainless steel car, you know.
No, he did a lot of other stuff. He was potentially one of the most influential guys in American cars in the 60s and
60s
70s.
60s and 70s, yeah. And then things kind of went wrong.
We'll save that for episode. A wunderkind.
Yeah.
He was a wunderkind.
Brilliant guy.
He was a boy wonder.
My favorite part about him is his chin implant.
Whoa, Joe.
Sorry to spoil
Don't
things.
Don't spoil that critical
there's
story.
There's a lot of chin content coming up. Yeah.
I'd say this episode is probably 95% chin.
Yeah, you know, we really didn't really dig into the car stuff because, you know, everybody knows that, but not a lot of people know about that chin. So we're going to be talking about John DeLorean's chin for about 2 hours combined. So strap in. Our source for today's episode is The DeLorean Story by Nick Sutton. All right, so.
Without further ado, let's dig in.
John DeLorean began his career as an engineer on the Packard Car Company design floor. His first major project was focused on improving the Packard Ultramatic two-speed automatic transmission. He helped design a new version that could shift from low gear into high on its own. Usually, like, you know, there's manuals and automatics. In the beginning, automatics were push button. Like, you didn't have to shift, but you still had to, like, operate them.
Mm-hmm.
And a two-speed automatic sounds like, I mean, that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
But because of the torque converter, it actually worked decently, you know? Because, mm-hmm. like, if you had two speeds in a manual,
yeah,
that would...
It'd be terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But because of that torque converter, it would, like, still kind of act like it had more gears mm-hmm. because...
But you had to just, like... Press a button to shift?
Yeah, so DeLorean's first big project was designing a transmission that could shift on its own in two speeds.
Amazing.
Yeah. Good start.
Yeah, I'd say.
For having just started his career, DeLorean was doing pretty all right. But Packard was beginning to suffer financially after World War II. Packard had refused to adapt to the times throughout the war, and they continued to produce over-engineered luxury cars that were pretty overpriced. DeLorean used this time to really hone in on his craft and develop a particular attention to detail. And after 4 years at Packard, he became the head of research and development. Soon after his promotion, the vice president of engineering at General Motors sought out DeLorean and offered him a job.
4 years, that's a fast-track exec right there.
Yeah, for sure.
DeLorean was given the choice to head any of the five divisions at GM.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Like, that's, you're just, first you're a dude who designed a transmission,
mm-hmm.
and then you're head of R&D,
mm-hmm.
and then now you get to choose any, that's Cadillac, Pontiac, yeah. Chevrolet, Oldsmobile, Buick. You get your choice.
Yeah. That's insane.
Which would you choose, James?
At that time? Chevrolet,
or
maybe Pontiac. Because was Pontiac the fun Chevrolet yet?
No.
Okay, I'd do Pontiac, and then I'd make that happen sooner.
Pontiac was like known for avant-garde stuff at this time, right?
They were. Well,
sorry.
I'm glad you asked, Joe. John chose to take on the Pontiac division as an assistant to the chief engineer. At the time, Pontiac was suffering. It had a reputation of being the old lady division of General Motors.
Damn.
Old ladies can be avant-garde sometimes. Yeah. You ever see Elon Musk's mom?
No.
Oh, yeah.
She's like a future space model.
Oh, wow.
Much like the Cybertruck.
Damn, she's cool looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like she was a supermodel, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
If my mom was like that, I'd probably make big trucks too. I'd probably be making electric cars right now
just to get your mind off of how hot your mom is.
Yeah, I better do
something. I gotta keep working.
I better go to the moon. Get away from my hot mommy. My girlfriend is Grimes.
That is the most bizarre thing.
It is,
but it kind of works, I guess.
It makes sense to me.
Are they still dating?
I love Elon Musk. They're getting married. She's having his baby.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What do you think they're gonna name their child?
Smidgen. Welcome back to Pass Gas, the number one car goss podcast.
Yeah. So yeah, at the time, Pontiac was the old lady division.
The Model B. The baby. They're gonna name it Model B.
Model baby.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
John viewed his new position at Pontiac as his chance to really prove his worth and revive a dying brand. And he had a pretty good idea of how to do just that.
So what kind of models added to this like granny image?
Like the Tempest and the Le Mans, and they're just boring cars. Like, they're nice, they're well built, but only appealed to people who wanted something that was not safe in a literal sense, but like, oh, better not rock the boat. Mm-hmm. This is a good car.
Yeah, like, you know? Conservative.
Conservative.
This is like the 50s?
Oh, this is the 50s.
Yeah,
late
so
50s.
You don't want to stand out in the 50s. Yeah, you want to just like disappear into the crowd.
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s. And this is at General Motors,
right,
which is possibly was and still is one of the most like conservative manufacturers in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. They're just like, they're successful because they're boring.
Right. They appeal to a lot of people because they don't really do, or they weren't doing a lot of stuff that would like shake the boat. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, we're America's brand. I go to work with a tie on. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. It is a car that I am proud of.
It is a great car.
Yeah. Not too proud.
Yeah. Not too proud.
Four,
yeah,
wheels.
Yeah. It's
well, during the design of the second generation of the Pontiac Tempest, John DeLorean had a great idea to breed some new life into the lineup. He decided that the best direction to take the company was to provide an option for the more performance-minded young people to enjoy.
That's the key.
That's us, baby.
Yeah.
Fist pounds all around,
oh, dude.
Nice. Performance-minded young people. Yeah. Dude, performance-minded young people sounds like a really sick, like, Japanese drift club.
Yeah.
Performance-minded.
We are the performance-minded young people, and we're going to take on Team Midnight.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Performance-minded young people. That's right. Let's put that on a shirt.
Performance-minded young. That's
really
cool. Don't steal that.
Don't steal that. No, trademark. GM had a policy that limited the engine size in their compact A-body cars to just 5.4 liters, which nowadays is huge.
Yeah, it's humongous.
But DeLorean, that boy was a risk taker, mm-hmm, and he loved to gamble on himself. So he skirted the GM policy by stuffing the larger 6.4 liter, 325 horsepower Pontiac V8 engine from the Pontiac Catalina into the smaller Pontiac Tempest. The equation of small car plus big engine equals fast. And he called the package GTO, an Italian abbreviation for Gran Turismo Omologato, Gran Tourer Homologated, a term originally used by a little boy named Enzo Ferrari. That's so sick, dude. Yeah. Like, what a boss move. Like, he's like, you know what we should do? Freaking engine swap.
But if I remember it correctly, he did it on the Lolo. Right?
Yeah.
Like, this was like a kind of a secret project that
this
he did.
This was not approved by GM.
Yeah. And it was just like a high-end performance option that only dealers knew about.
Dude, whenever I hear about these like secret skunkworks projects that went on in, you know, car companies, I'm like, how big is that building? Like, how can you hide the production of a whole freaking car?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I got sucked into an urban decay exploration channel yesterday, mm-hmm, and there's this dude that lives in Detroit, and he goes to the old Packard factory, which is like,
oh, sweet,
literally like 40 acres.
Whoa.
Of just like crumbling buildings.
Whoa.
And he's like walking through, and there's like bricks falling down, like it's just decaying. Then he goes to, in a later video, he goes to the AMC headquarters, which turned into a Chrysler plant at some point, but it's just like massive buildings for like, you know, 10 square blocks.
Yeah, if you're a listener and you work in one of these giant facilities, send us an email.
Yeah, at info at donut.media.
Let's go ahead and say passgas@donut.media.
Is there a passgas email?
There will be, okay, after this.
I think
this
before is the this second
comes
time
out.
We've sent that.
Yeah, send us an email at passgas at donut.media and let us know how big these places are. Because I can't wrap my little brain around it.
It's literally impossible to imagine.
It was a major risk to produce the GTO, or at least that's what the conservative GM leadership thought. They weren't as forward-thinking as John DeLorean. And he was only allowed to construct about 5,000 GTOs in 1964. You might imagine GM's surprise when over 40,000 people ordered the GTO within the first year.
That's like a huge... Actually, I mean, compared to like other cars at the time, because like everyone was buying cars,
mm-hmm,
that's like a little small. But I mean, if they only thought 5,000 people,
right? I mean, it's a super specialty model.
Yeah,
And it, yeah, if it's super secret and when people like hear about it, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of performance-minded young people.
It sure is. You know? Can't count out those performance-minded young people.
You can't. And because of that, the Tempest GTO marked the unofficial beginning of the muscle car era in America, as well as John's full-scale assault on Detroit.
DeLorean, activate.
Dude, we should make the, like, cyber tech, like, robocopy DeLorean story. Like,
assault on Detroit. DeLorean, assault on
There's, like,
Detroit.
A reimagined history of DeLorean.
Like, Abe Lincoln with Vampire Hunter, or, like, Pride and Prejudice with zombies. John DeLorean had arrived.
And he was going to mix it up.
He remained at Pontiac until February of 1969. Nice. When he was promoted to head of Chevrolet. Almost immediately after his arrival, the Chevy Vega was announced. DeLorean had imagined a value-packed car that was also very stylish. The best of both worlds. And for a little while, the vision held true. The Vega was a good-looking and well-priced small car and fought hard against the German and Japanese competition.
The car-buying public loved the Vega. Cars flew off the lots. During the first model year in 1971, Chevrolet sold over 277,000 of these things. That number nearly doubled the next year to 394,000. The upward swing in sales continued for the next few years, but the car was beginning to earn a bit of a reputation.
What kind of reputation? Oh boy, this sounds bad.
Yeah, the way I did, when I said it like this.
You talk out of the side of your mouth.
Probably not a good reputation.
That's how I knew.
That's a cue to the listener that they should probably pay a little attention at this point. Put down that phone. In the beginning, the Vega was well built, but after about 40,000 of them, production quality of the Vega started to suffer. To keep the price down and make the car more affordable, lots of corners were cut throughout production. The most significant of those corners was the super thin sheet metal that made up the bodywork. The sheet metal was covered with an anti-corrosion primer like any car, but the application was botched, causing very premature rust all over the body. It was common to have to replace the fenders after a single winter, even in states California, which
is like, we don't have rust here. Yeah, it's never.
We don't have winter here.
Yeah.
Dude, it was so cold last week. It was like 60.
Yeah. And to make matters worse, the Vega's cooling system was awful. The 2.3-liter inline-four engine frequently overheated, demolishing cylinders and piston rings. But despite these small issues, the Vega still sold very well, moving almost 2 million units in its 8-year run. A sales rally that soured many owners' opinions of Chevy. So if you make a bad car and you sell a ton of them, that means more people are going to be pissed off at you and think that your cars are pieces of trash.
That's economics 101.
It's economics 101.
Yeah, yeah. I took Ec 101, and that was the first thing that... Yeah. Like, the professor came in, wrote his name on the board in chalk.
Yeah, welcome to... Economics 101.
Bill Cosby. You make a bad call, Rudy. That's horrible. You
make a bad call, Rudy. Can we do Bill Cosby impressions anymore?
He's in jail.
He's in jail.
He's been punished.
He can't get us. He can't come get us. Where's the pudding?
You come home and just in the darkness, there's like a figure eating like pudding in your kitchen.
Hello, hear Rudy. Pudding sounds.
Oh my god!
No, I walked right into that one.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
The car that promised to be America's small and efficient alternative to foreign cars actually drove buyers straight to foreign cars.
Whoops.
That's the opposite of what we wanted. But still, that didn't matter to GM. As long as they were making money, they thought they were doing great.
I mean, at the end of the day.
Dude, that's economics 102.
Yeah.
As long as you're making money, you're doing great.
My favorite is the Cosworth Vega. That thing is sick.
Yeah,
thing
made
is
really a Cosworth
cool.
Vega.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's got like gold accents and stuff. It's very cool.
The track version made like 400 horsepower.
What?
Yeah.
There's maybe a couple on Facebook. Wrong.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
We should all buy Cosworth
Vegas. They made 5,000 of them, and like they only sold 3,500, and then the rest were just like rotting on lots forever.
That sucks, crazy, dude.
As long as GM was making money, they thought they were doing great. And if John DeLorean was good at anything, that boy got that paper. Woo! He made money. He had the Midas touch. Whatever he touched undoubtedly turned to gold-plated cars.
Oh, boy, I hear a nickname coming on.
He quickly found his position on GM's 14th floor, better known as the executive level. At the age of 40, DeLorean had broken the record for youngest division head ever at GM.
So that tells you, like, who the people that were running GM were. There were a lot of older guys who had they were company men. You know, back in the day, like, all those guys, they worked for GM all their life, and they worked their way to the top.
They want that watch when they retire.
Yeah, yeah. They want that.
They don't
want
to shake it up. No. They want to keep it chill.
But John was a younger dude, even at 40.
Yeah, and he was making him a bunch of money. Yep. But those old guys just couldn't help but resent his youthful lifestyle.
Why is that, James?
Or say, that's right, James.
Oh, that's right, James. GM tried hard to make their executives blend into the background. Each executive was basically a carbon copy of the next.
Like Agent Smith.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But all just old, stinky white dudes.
Yeah.
That can't do anything that Agent Smith can do.
They don't even know any karate.
No. You ever try to fire a Desert Eagle with one hand?
No, I would love to, though.
It's hard. No,
maybe at Joe's bachelor party.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, let me know now so I can put my order in for 16 Desert Eagles.
Hey, guys, I got you all a personalized Desert Eagle and 500 rounds of ammunition.
I mean,
this is
this
is my formal RSVP to your bachelor.
It's on the record. It's on the record, Joe. You can't deny it. It's on the record. It's in the world now. It's on the internet. You're coming?
Yeah.
I'm kidding. That's great.
John, he was a wild and crazy guy. He wore bell bottoms.
Yeah.
Open collared shirts.
Yes.
Showed that chest hair.
Yeah.
And he spent his weekends in California.
Woohoo.
You know, that's where we all party.
Yeah. John DeLorean loved to party.
Yeah. He was the antithesis of the typical GM exec.
Hey, I'm going to Temecula this weekend. Care to follow me?
We're going to Spokcha. A Forbes article about DeLorean puts it the best by stating he understood something other auto industry executives haven't yet grasped. Automobiles were just as much about style as they were about nuts and bolts.
Well put.
Great quote. Unlike a typical GM exec, DeLorean wore trendy clothes. He had that trendy lifestyle. He underwent plastic surgery to shape his face.
Yes. What a cool guy.
He bought a stronger jaw and was focused on his...
That's the weirdest way of saying he got a chin implant.
Yeah. And he was very focused on his appearance, as he realized that his appearance directly impacted the marketing of his cars. All in all, he was as close to being a rock star as an exec could be.
Hey, have you guys seen John lately?
Yeah, he looks like Jay Leno.
Does his chin look bigger to you guys?
Did he add a butt to it?
Yeah, he didn't have a chin butt before, right?
No, he definitely, right?
I don't know. I saw him open a bottle with it the other day.
He opened the fridge in the break room the other day, and it hit his chin, and it sounded like he dropped a fork.
If I was going to get a chin implant, it'd be like a diffuser to make me more like aerodynamic when I'm running really fast. Yeah.
It looked like the top of the Supra.
Like the front of an F1 car. Hey, here comes Nolan. The one thing that GM could not get behind was Johnny Boy's love life. Mm-mm. In 1954, John married his high school sweetheart, Elizabeth Higgins. But in 1969, nice, they divorced so he could spend more time on the West Coast.
As you do.
Listen, baby, I know you've been married for 15 years, but you're really getting in the way of me spending more time on the other side of the country.
Yeah, Eat LA is next week, and I can't.
He quickly remarried after only a few months to actress and model Kelly Harmon. Kelly would later become a prominent spokeswoman for Tic Tacs. She was only 19 at the time of their marriage, a fact the couple hid when they added a few years to her age when the marriage was announced. Johnny Boy was fody-fo. Unfortunately, John's marriage to actress and model Kelly Harmon didn't last very long, and another divorce was filed in 1972. But fortunately, John quickly found love.
Oh,
and married
God.
And he married actress and model Christina Ferrara just 1 year later.
Now, this guy doesn't seem problematic at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, this guy's not a crazy psychopath. Christina had recently been rated as the number one model in America by somebody.
by John DeLorean.
By John DeLorean. Hey, she's the number one model in America next to the Pontiac Solstice. John's quickly rotating marriage status stoked resentment from his peers at GM. But each time John DeLorean was criticized, he would remind them just how much money he was making the company.
Hey, John, you getting married again?
Yeah, but I just made $16 billion for this place.
Damn it!
In a world where money equals success, DeLorean was a successful man.
His marriage to the top actress and model in the country wasn't the only life-changing event in 1972. That same year, he was appointed to vice president of car and truck production for the entire GM Corporation.
Dang.
So he's the big dog.
Mm-hmm.
He's running things.
He doesn't stay on the porch.
Nah.
He runs at the head of the pack.
Yeah, if you can't run with the big dogs.
Stay on the porch, pup.
We had a big dog store. In Atascadero.
Yeah, duh.
And I think I made my mom take me there once. I don't remember buying anything.
Yeah.
Mom, take me to the big dogs.
I want to see the big dogs. I want to run with the big dogs.
I'm just over here sitting on the porch.
Big Dogs is a surprisingly approachable company. Like, you'll tweet at them and they'll tweet back at you.
Yeah, have you tweeted Big Dogs? Yeah.
Yeah. Our friend Matt Cordova is like a huge Big Dogs fan. Has like all these vintage Big Dogs shirts.
Should we try and get sponsored by Big Dogs?
Yes.
Yo,
yes.
Big Dogs. Donut, Pass Gas the podcast. Anything on donut.
Oh my God.
We would love to get we would love to work with you guys. Hit us up. I guess on Instagram.
Yeah,
tag us on Instagram.
Pass Gas. We want to run with the big dogs.
We love your product.
We love your product.
I love the ones where it's just like the big not like buff, but like big dog.
Yeah, big, like us.
Yeah. And he's just like, you got a problem with me? Take it up with the boss or something like that. Like, me.
My favorite part is that most of the dogs are wearing sunglasses.
Yeah, dude.
And I like to think that the artist is like, I'm really not great at drawing dogs' eyes.
They have like human eyes.
Yeah, the eyes are kind of weird. Can we do something about that? They're like really like so much more detailed than the rest of the drawing. Just like these perfect
like
human
eyelashes.
Eyes. They're following me.
I really love the dog on aggressive rollerblades grinding down a handrail. But why do the eyes have to be photorealistic?
Sorry. To collect myself. The next logical step for John was to jockey for the president of GM, but he didn't exactly want that.
That's the thing he does, where it lets us know that something's coming up.
John knew GM's tragic flaw. He saw that GM would keep doing the same thing and producing the same car year after year as long as it was making money.
And he was right.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good business.
Yeah.
While they would ignore the growing small car markets dominated by companies such as Volkswagen, he knew that in the end, foreign cars were smaller and better than the cheap, predictable rubbish being produced by GM.
A lot of John's success came from his blatant disobedience of GM's orders. It sort of became a catch-22 for GM and himself. While the company hated when he would go out of his way to do what he wanted against their wishes, they also loved that sweet, sweet cheddar cheese that he raked in for them.
He's like the original disruptor.
But this time, he would push his luck a bit too far.
You know, hearing this, like, I really wonder what would happen if he had worked at Chrysler instead of GM. Because, I mean, they're, like, Chrysler's whole thing is that they weren't Ford or GM. They were smaller.
Yeah.
And thus, they would take a lot more risks with their designs. Like, their muscle cars are just, in my opinion at least, way crazier than the ones being
like
put up.
Like the Superbird.
Yeah, Superbird. Like, just putting huge engines in. I mean, John would have fit right in with them. And that's a pretty interesting alternate timeline to think of.
That's like a, we can make that movie, like an alternate history.
Whoa.
That, and like four people would like it.
Yeah.
Spend $200 million on it.
In 1973, John was in a bit of a dark place in his life. He had just divorced from his second wife, actress and model Kelly Harmon, and he was growing more and more frustrated with the overall quality of GM's cars. DeLorean was set to give a confidential speech to the top 700 GM executives at the Greenbrier Hotel GM Management Conference in West Virginia.
Yo, dude, you going to the Greenbrier Hotel?
I've been
GM
to the Greenbrier
Management?
Hotel.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it like?
The Greenbrier?
Yeah.
It's insane. It's where they have the bunker underground that if we got in a nuclear war, they would ship Congress there.
Wow.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And you did shots down there or something?
Yeah, I did shots. Yeah. DeLorean was set to give a confidential speech to the top 700 GM executives at the Greenbrier Hotel in West Virginia for the GM Management Conference. His entire presentation revolved around a single topic, the poor quality of GM's cars. The speech was extraordinarily critical of the entire company, and he planned to go face-to-face with the people responsible.
Taking it to the man. Even though he is kind of the man.
He is the man.
Yeah, but he's taking it to the other
man.
The
other men.
Yeah.
He's like, we gotta be better, boys. John's staff insisted that he tone down his rhetoric, which he begrudgingly accepted.
He took their advice.
DeLorean did not like the feeling of being censored, and soon enough, an unedited copy of his speech leaked into the newspaper.
How did that happen? John, I don't know how it ended up in there.
Ken Miles.
I don't know how the newspaper got me speech.
We'll get back to more Pass Gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
After an internal investigation, it was determined that DeLorean had leaked his own speech. needed an investigation.
I mean, he wouldn't, right?
No, I mean, unless that chin gained sentience and control over DeLorean's brain.
We're going to take over the world, see?
You're not the boss anymore, John. I'm the boss of this body.
The chin is just James Cagney.
Chin DeLorean. Yeah, so he leaked his own speech. He wanted the world to know how he truly felt. Most of the time, when John took a risk, it paid off. But this was not one of those.
Oh my
guys.
God! Let's tone that down.
Shortly after the leak,
how will we know? Yeah. How will we know, Joe? How will we know that something big is coming up?
Shortly after the leak, John DeLorean was forced to resign from his position at General Motors. The brilliant salesman he was, though, John managed to take what would have been a very embarrassing and potentially career-ending move and spin himself into being the hero of it all. He told the New York Times that he wouldn't let his genius go to waste at GM, as they had already had, quote, too many bean counters and not enough engineers. On top of that, he stated that, quote, even at $650,000 a year, if the job is not satisfying, you do something else.
Damn.
That's something that only someone making $650K a year can say.
Dude, freaking, back then, how much is that now?
That would be
I'm guessing $1.3 million.
Yeah, I think it's safe.
$3.9 million.
Shoot.
A year.
That a year?
That's some sauce, baby.
Ooh, that's some sweet, sweet sauce.
Yeah, I think I'd probably put up with the bean counters if I was making that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so after all the dust settled, DeLorean came out on top in the eyes of the public. Throughout his time at GM, DeLorean had always dreamt of what he called the, quote, ethical car. He wanted to create a car that was safe, long-lasting over 25 years, and sustainable.
Nice.
Forward-thinking guy. The car of his dreams was going to be, quote, eternal. He also dreamt of building an exotic and contemporary-looking sports car for the masses.
That's a lot of things rolled into one, huh?
Yeah. It's going to be everything. You want a fast car? You got it. Sustainable car? You got it. Affordable car? Well,
you got it. We'll try.
Yeah.
On October 24th, 1975, the DeLorean Motor Company was officially founded in Detroit, 2 years after John's departure from General Motors. His primary motivation was to show GM what they had missed out on by firing him, which is very healthy.
I mean, they had like 20 years of him, you know? Yeah. It's not like
they know.
They know.
Yeah. The ability to have complete control over his own creative outlets was just one benefit to starting his own company. DeLorean wanted to make the best car possible that had the least environmental impact while still being the best bang for your buck for customers. The DeLorean was going to be able to do everything.
You know, James, if there's one thing I've learned here at Donut, it's that when you make a car that does everything, it never goes wrong.
Yeah. It always does everything well.
Yeah, perfectly.
DMC really had two founders, John DeLorean and Bill Collins. Bill Collins had worked with John back at Pontiac and was a key player in the development of the GTO.
John trusted Bill Collins.
And John immediately focused his ambitions on securing funds for the company, leaving the development of DMC's first car to the in the competent hands of Billy Collins.
That may sound like an unfair division of labor, but securing funding for the company was equally as difficult as developing a car from scratch.
We'll hear about that a little bit later.
The only real asset the company had in the beginning was John's prior experience at GM.
It's what you call an intangible asset. You don't know how much it's worth.
Wow.
I learned that literally yesterday.
Oh, nice.
I did.
You watching TED Talks again?
No.
Again.
My lady's in the biz. She knows business words.
So I'd say we all have intangible
assets.
Right? We bring to Donut.
Yeah, totally. Like, you can do more pull-ups than anyone I've ever seen in my life.
Dude, and after I start rock climbing more, I'm going to be, like, climbing all over the office.
I cannot wait.
Starting your own car company was basically impossible. The last car company that was ever capable of making it without going under was Chrysler in the 1920s, and even they had to receive a bailout. While John sold his confidence and charm, Bill designed the prototype that would become the DMC 12. When it came to the design of the DMC 12, its most notable feature may be the distinctive stainless steel body. Unpainted stainless steel was used because it never rusted, and DeLorean intended to reach his 25-year survival mark by building a car that could withstand the elements.
It was designed by Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Yeah, who also, I believe, designed the Scirocco.
Yeah, and the Golf.
Yeah.
Mark I Golf.
And a lot of other cars, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's literally the most influential car designer of the 20th century.
Yeah, he's my favorite.
And they called it the DMC 12 because they wanted to offer it for $12,000.
Whoa. Oh. The car was also powered by a V6 engine developed by Peugeot, Renault, and Volvo, known as the PRV, making a whopping 130 horsepower.
Almost 2 years after founding the company in 1976, DeLorean unveiled the first prototype of the DMC-12 DeLorean. The press ate it up.
Ooh, they're just eating at that buffet.
Like spaghetti, baby. Detroit reviewers even viewed the car as being as significant as the Ford Model A.
Wow.
People were excited, and investors were jumping on board. But unfortunately for Johnny D, they still couldn't secure enough funding. But fortunately for Johnny D, they were able to get help from an unlikely source. Okay, let's rewind a bit. The late 1960s marked the beginning of a period in Ireland known as the Troubles, more widely known as the Northern Ireland conflict.
In 1921, Ireland was released from British control and partitioned into two separate states, Northern Ireland, which was majority Protestant and identified as British, and Ireland, which was majority Catholic and
not British.
Not British.
Irish.
Irish. Northern Ireland remained under British control and resulted in a divide between Catholics and Protestants. The Irish claimed that the borders of Northern Ireland were created primarily for gerrymandering purposes and that Northern Ireland was an illegitimate and undemocratic state.
Do you know that Protestants drink Jameson and Catholics drink Powers whiskey?
Huh. I guess I gotta drink Powers.
Are you Catholic?
I think so, yeah. Fast forward 50 years. Tensions between the two groups had continued to rise. In 1969, nice, riots began in Northern Ireland.
Appropriate use of
yeah, nice. Great.
The divide between the Protestants and Catholics had reached its boiling point, and things were starting to get messy.
A young Bono.
No.
Without going too far into the topic, because it is a very complicated conflict, and I'm not very smart, and this is a card podcast, things were getting pretty tense. British troops were brought in to help calm the riots, but that just made things worse. The IRA was engaging in guerrilla-style attacks and bombings against both civilians and soldiers. A majority of the conflict was centered around the cities of Belfast and Derry. At this point in time, Northern Ireland was a rough place. And while looking for governments to invest in his car, John DeLorean kept striking out. No country was going to invest their capital into a company that had no guaranteed return, except for Northern Ireland. The British-controlled government of Northern Ireland invested over $140 million into the DeLorean Motor Company for them to build their factory in Belfast.
No one else would go to Belfast because it was such a dangerous place to be. In fact, the area's extreme violence scared off any industrialists. But DeLorean was desperate to make his dream come true. So when the Northern Ireland government offered DeLorean money and land, he jumped at the chance. John offered something to Northern Ireland that they needed more than anything else. Jobs. The unemployment rate in Northern Ireland was crazy high at the time, averaging at nearly 40%. So the government gave him loans, grants, and more land. The only catch was that John had to train an inexperienced workforce, build a factory, and have cars roll off the assembly line within 2 years.
I can't do anything in 2 years.
At this point, John had nothing more than a hand-built prototype of the DMC-12. He was nowhere near prepared to actually start selling cars within such a short time, so a major redesign of his factory structure was necessary. John brought on legendary name in the car world at the time, Mr. Colin Chapman. You might know him as the founder and engineer of Lotus Cars. A man who dominated Formula One and was building some of the most advanced race cars at the time.
Now, the partnership with Lotus actually started out pretty awkwardly. People like Bill Collins, who had been an integral part in the development of the DMC-12 prototype, were slowly phased out as their duties were just passed directly over to Lotus's engineering team. Colin Chapman was willing to do some fishy things financially that Bill and his team weren't very comfortable with. When Bill discovered that John was paying crazy amounts of money to an unexplained company, GPD Services, Bill called it quits and tendered his resignation. Bill Collins resigned from the company despite practically creating their entire car. This was the beginning of John DeLorean's money over everything mindset.
Things started out pretty well in Northern Ireland for DeLorean. The entire factory was a social experiment of sorts. Inside the DMC factory was one of the first times in a long time that both Catholics and Protestants could be seen working together in Northern Ireland.
I take a shot of Powers.
And I take a shot of Jameson.
Okay.
You must accept that the Pope is a direct ear to God.
I'll never do that.
I'll kill you, you Protestant bastard!
This demonstrated that a successful mixed workforce really was possible and that people were able to work together for a common interest. If you ask most of the workers at the DeLorean factory, they would all say the same thing. It was the best job they ever had. And it's true. The factory floor became a symbol of national unity and people were excited for the future of the company.
One thing that stood out about John, besides his chin, was his calmness. He was building a factory basically in the middle of a war zone. You'd imagine he might be a little bit stressed out, right? But not John DeLorean. The world could be collapsing around him and he wouldn't even blink, which was a good trait to have because, in fact, the world was about to be collapsing around him.
That's
in January 1981, the first wave of DMC cars rolled off the assembly line. Immediately, the car was struck with quality control issues and became a product warranty nightmare. Literally, everything on the car broke. On top of it all, the DMC-12 was nothing like the car DeLorean had promised. It sucked. It cost more than a Corvette, but it was slower than a Corvette. It handled like a truck and had a pretty unreliable engine to propel it down the streets. The only innovative aspect of the entire thing lied purely on the stainless steel body and weird gullwing doors.
They are cool.
I don't think it got mentioned, but the PRV engine wasn't the first choice. They wanted like a turbo four cylinder.
That would have been cool.
And then they were like, they're looking at other, I think they even, because when Con Chapman got brought in and he had a relationship with Ford, they were thinking about bringing like a Ford engine in.
Like a Cosworth or something? Maybe?
Not really. But yeah, this PRV engine was like garbage. And they were like, okay, it's cheap, whatever, just put it in.
Do you know why they put the engine in the back? That's always been a strange choice to me.
No.
If you want to know more about the actual tech of the car, you can check out the episode of Up to Speed on the DMC-12. Yeah,
that's a good throw.
On our YouTube.
Nice.
It's hosted by me.
Oh.
It's written by me.
No, I don't think it is. The only innovative accent. It wasn't what the people were promised, and on top of it, it couldn't have come at a worse time. 1981 also marked a pretty major economic recession in the U.S., so the market for these weird cars basically evaporated.
When your car starts having quality controls issues, what do? Well, there are a few options. You can try and fix it, or you can pull a Ford Pinto and just keep paying the damages because it's too much work to fix it. John discovered a third option. He decided against fixing the production issues and doubled down on factory output. The outcome was something no one could have predicted. Unsold cars backing up on the lot. There are some pretty incredible pictures of warehouses just stacked full of unwanted cars. And that's where we'll pick up next time in John DeLorean Part 2.
I think we should mention that, like, this could have been a very sick car. Like, Lotus designed, like, mid-engine.
Yeah, the
wedge car.
Not even mid-engine. Rear
engine. Designed rear engine. Yeah. Lotus was on board. And
that's why it was rear engine. If Giorgetto designed it for Porsche. Ooh.
The plot thickens, my pretty. They're putting flour in the soup. It's thickening up. Is this a bisque? This is a thick soup.
I love doing roux.
Roux?
When you pour a roux in a soup?
Oh, yeah. Roux are hard to make, huh? They're like, not hard, but
it's
like,
just butter and flour.
Yeah, but you can burn it and make it too brown.
Yeah, but as long as you cook it for like a couple minutes, if you're pouring it into a soup, that cooks it. So you're like, you don't have to like go overboard with cooking them.
We should have a donut cooking podcast.
Yeah.
Joe is like a very experienced chef.
I'd love to talk about food more.
All right,
I'm
this
so
is getting
hungry
off
right now.
Anyway, yeah. Thanks for listening to Past Gas Podcast. If you haven't already, check out our YouTube channel, Donut Media.
Please do.
If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast.
Yeah, Donut Podcast channel.
Oh, we also have a Donut Podcast channel.
Subscribe to that one.
Subscribe to that one. Leave us a review.
Yeah.
It's the only way we know if we're doing well. Let us know what we can do better.
We're getting great reviews. Keep it going.
Keep it going.
A couple people don't like that we hated on rich people last
oh, really?
Episode. Yeah,
oh,
but
no.
Whatever.
Whatever. I can because I am rich. Cool. Follow Donut on Instagram and Twitter at Donut Media. Follow Joe on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
Dark Webinar on Instagram. Joe Webb on Twitter.
Yeah, seriously. Let's get Joe some more followers. Yeah. Very funny. Works very hard.
Let's get Nolan some more followers on Instagram and Twitter at Nolan J. Sykes.
Sure. Thank you.
And let's go ahead and follow me too at James Pumphrey on both those things.
Yeah, blue checkmark guy over here.
Yeah, I just got verified.
They just hand you a suitcase of $100,000. Yeah.
Seriously, Google James Pumphrey net worth. It's completely factual.
And we'll see you guys next Monday for part two of John DeLorean.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what happens to that chin.